Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Text number 5, I think.
Sau mangalya giro vipra. Sutta maghra vandina.
You did it? That means we did 5, 6, and 7? Okay, I'll do 8. Okay.
Maharha Vastra Borona Kanchukosh Nishabushita Gopa Samayas Gopa Samayayurajan Nanopayana Parnaya Maharha Vastra Borono Kanchukosh Nishabushita Gopa Samaya Yurajan Nanopayana Panaya Maha-arha, extremely valuable. Vastra-avarana, with garments and ornaments. Kanchuka, by a particular type of garment used in Vrindavan. Ushnisha, with turbans. Bhushita, being nicely decorated. Gopa, all the cowherd men. Samayayuhu, came there. Rajan, O king. Maharaja Parikshit. Nana, various. Upayana, presentations. Parnayaha, holding in their hands. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O King Parikshit, the cowherd men, dressed very opulently, with valuable ornaments and garments such as coats and turbans, decorated in this way and carrying various presentation in their hands, they approached the house of Nanda Maharaja. Purport. When we consider the past condition of the agricultural list in the village, we can see how opulent he was, simply because of agricultural produce and the protection of cows. At the present, however, agriculture having been neglected and cow protection given up, the agriculturalist is suffering pitiably and is dressed in a niggardly torn cloth. This is the distinction between the India of history and the India of the present day. By the atrocious activities of Ugra Karma, how we are killing the opportunity of human civilization. This is the source of opulence, is the earth. The food that grows from the earth. This is our opulence. But we destroy it. We irradiate it and freeze it for 6 months and then expect people to buy it and consider it food. It's been dead for 6 months. And you go to your supermarket and can pick from 40 different kinds of dead vegetables, irradiated and you know, transmuted by the miracles of science into something that's not even edible anymore, not healthy. But the real opulence of the earth is this fresh, natural food. Visit someone who lives on a farm and have lunch with him with vegetables that he picked from the garden just before starting to cook, and notice the difference. This is the opulence of the earth. And then, beside eating, if we want to dress nicely, that's also provided by the earth. Cotton, cloth, growing from the earth. The jewels that we can decorate our body with, these are all the gifts of the earth. This is the source of real opulence. Therefore, wealth means possession of land. This has been the economy of the world almost forever. Now, the Kshatriyas are landholders. And whoever has a lot of land is a powerful person. And the poor man has no land. But even simple people had a plot of land, had some cows, protected the cows, got the milk, and lived very nicely. And they could trade their milk products for everything else they needed. Simple life, but very, Baba says, opulent. How opulent the agriculturalist in the village was. Advantageous life, desirable, comfortable, even opulent. But because of the perversions that we have imposed on our civilization, killing the cows instead of protecting them, doing agriculture in artificial, unhealthy ways, with pesticides and chemical fertilizers and everything else that spoils the land, I recently looked at a book that's published some 20 years ago, the first time I saw it, describing how the cows are actually taken care of in the United States and the Western countries, what they feed them. There's a whole industry, I don't want to describe it too much, it's too disgusting, but there's a whole industry called rendering, where they take all the dead animals, including all the diseased animals that could not even be, that were refused by the slaughterhouses, and they cook them all down and take that and feed it to the cows and the other livestock. You know, dead animals, dead diseased animals, cats and dogs and anything else. You know, we're forcing the cows to be cannibals. And then we eat that. We eat the cow flesh. And it gets into, you know, it's used for our soap and our, you know, the lard that people cook with. Be careful when you buy a bar of soap. Consider what's in it. So such perversions are going on. Even the people who are raising cows, in order to take their milk, the dairy farmers, what they're feeding the cows, and what they do to the cows when they're too old to give milk. It's all become abominable. And therefore, the earth is not happy to bestow her gifts abundantly. Yagya bhavati parijanyo, by performance of sacrifice, the rain comes and the food grows. But when people, instead of performing sacrifice, are doing all abominable things against the principles of religion, even in the course of conducting agriculture, then everything becomes unfortunate. Village life becomes very undesirable. So in India today, there are still 500,000 villages. Look on the map of Mathura district. I have a detailed map. There are a few cities. Mathura, Govardhan is a tiny city, some 20,000 people, and a few others like that. But beside that, there's at least 500, maybe close to 1,000 villages speckling the
district of Mathura.
People are living out there. People who don't speak Hindi. You know, speak heavy Brij Bhasha and don't even know standard Hindi. They can't even understand what the people in Mathura are saying. People who are, you know, way out there in the country. And that's the bulk of the population, still of India, are living in the villages. But they don't want to anymore. Their children, whenever they can, pay 10 rupees to get on the bus and go to the city and watch a movie, eat some nonsense, and then go home. And then if they can get away from the village and go to live in the towns, even if it means taking a very unpleasant occupation, they'll do it. Everybody wants to leave the villages and go live in the cities. And therefore such cities as Bombay and Calcutta have arisen where they didn't exist before the British came and did the final job of destroying Vedic culture once and for all. You know, just put the nails on the coffin. The British established these cities that didn't exist. And people are flocking to them by the millions, wanting to leave the villages because village life is no longer enjoyable and desirable. But it's not, it's only because the natural order of things has been seriously disrupted. Here, 5,000 years ago in Vraja, Nanda Maharaj and the cowherds celebrated Krishna's birth, and they dressed themselves very nicely. A Vaishnav doesn't have to be poorly dressed. Prabhupada's godbrother, Bhakti Rakshaka Sridhar Maharaj, was sort of famous in the Gaudiya Math for not bothering to dress himself nicely. Bhaktisanta Saraswati would tease him for that. Sannyasi going out to preach, and he didn't dress so nice. Bhaktisanta Saraswati wanted his sannyasis to dress themselves nicely for preaching. Even we see photographs of, in Mayapur, the devotees greeting foreigners. Yeah, at Mayapur. And he had, Prabhupada Bhaktisanta Saraswati had his leading devotees dressed up in a suit that looked like an Anglican minister, you know, black suit frock with a watch chain and a turban on their head. So they can be identified as swamis. Yeah. But he had them dressed like Western gentlemen, like Western ministers, you know, religious ministers. Just to make a good impression on people. So here the Vrijbasis are dressing up in their best clothes to celebrate Krishna's birthday. They still do like that. We see people coming from small villages from all over, and they're dressed in their best clothes, coming to do Govardhan Parikrama. Not to show off, to let everybody know how rich they are. You don't do that in India. You know, you may give your wife fancy saris, but the rich businessman will dress himself very simply because he doesn't want to advertise to people how much money he has. You know, his wife has to be allowed to wear nice saris, you know, and jewelry, but the man himself will just, you know, dress in a plain shirt and pants and not show off his wealth because you don't want someone to give you the evil eye. And so you don't show off your wealth. That's not Indian culture. But when it's time to celebrate Krishna's birthday or to do the parikrama of Giriraj, then you dress in your nicest. Not to advertise your wealth, not as an opportunity to enjoy your opulences, but for the pleasure of Krishna. Everybody, the villagers are all putting on, you know, the ladies are putting on, are wearing their dowries, you know, all the silver and all their nice sari, because they want to look nice for Giriraj's pleasure. This is the actual culture. Devotees should dress nicely when it's time to worship Krishna and celebrate his different festivals for his pleasure. The distinction between the India of history and the India of the present day. This is not India of mythology we're talking about. India used to be, even in the memory of living people,
It used to be much more nice place than it is now. The streets used to be clean. There used to still be a consciousness that you don't only clean your own house. You also see that the outside is cleaned. Maybe it's not done by you. The culture demands that only the bungies can sweep the street. And therefore the lady householders can't do the cleaning outside their own threshold. But arrangements were made, so the streets were kept clean. That's Vedic culture. What we see nowadays, that the people's houses may be clean on the inside, but any public space is abominable, that's not actual Vedic culture. That's a perversion. That's only in recent years. If you took got on a time ship and went back 150 years, you would see an India that was much cleaner and organized than it is nowadays. Village life was comfortable and even opulent. The cities were not filthy and chaotic like they are now. Life was decent. And India was the richest country in the world and the most best governed and organized. That's the India of history. You won't read about it in the history books that are sold in the stores and read in the schools. This is the unwritten or the underground history of India. That Indian culture is actually the richest, and India was always the richest country. But because just as a person who is full grown is considered fully responsible to the law, if an adult commits a crime, he does not have the same excuse as a child who doesn't know better. A child is not usually punished fully for the same crime. There are special children's courts and special places where they send criminal children, reform schools. They don't send them to the regular penitentiary and don't give them the normal sentence for the same crime. Children are given leniency in punishment. So the rest of the world are spiritually children. They're being punished for their sins. But the Indians get punished more severely for the same sins. For the same materialism, India becomes 10 times more degraded than the Western countries. A child acts foolish, it's to be expected. But an adult cannot get away with acting like a child. So therefore, India is responsible to be civilized. And when Indians refuse to be civilized, they're punished very severely for it. And therefore, the condition of modern India. There's ample explanation of it, why things are so abominable nowadays in India. Because of the people who should know better, who should be the upholders of civilization and spiritual culture, are, with all knowledge, reneging on their duty, failing to do their duty. Therefore, Prabhupada went to the Western countries. If the Indians are not going to take up this mission, then okay, I'll go to the West. I'll make the Westerners into disciples, bring them back, and show the Indians what they should be doing. Not that Prabhupada gave up completely on India. He went to America, made a few disciples, and brought them back to India to wake the Indians up. He didn't think that by themselves the Englishmen and the Americans are going to save the world. As a combined effort is needed. Now, therefore, Prabhupada wanted international society for Krishna consciousness, not separate, each nationality having its own department, separate, its own ashrams. Manipuri ashram, Orissa ashram. No, the ashrams are supposed to be international because we need a mixed collection of devotees. The lame man and the blind man have to help each other find their way. So therefore Prabhupada wanted to make East and West meet and work together. And that way revive the original culture, which India has given up and the West never knew in the first place. Okay, Hare Krishna. So any questions or comments? Yes.
You mentioned about dressing nicely, and what does it mean for the body in this country, for example, in the male body, to dress nicely except that you put a body in a white robe or a saffron robe? What does it mean besides that?
The clothes should be clean and presentable.
Besides putting a clean body, maybe just...
Yeah, not ripped, not stained, not... so old that the that you can't even see the threads, it's all holes. And the body should be clean. You should clean yourself, you shouldn't smell bad. And you should wear a tilak. You shouldn't fail to have tilak on your forehead. That's basically it. You don't have to wear rings and necklaces and gold chains, that's not required. Simple. It's a brahmachari life is meant to be simple. We dress simply. Prabhupada wanted, I don't know when he said this, that we should dress not like babus, but like sadhus. We shouldn't dress just like fops. Dress very fashionably, because that's to attract the opposite sex. We should dress decently, but like simple sadhus, not like Pesewalas. We should fold our dhotis in the back. Tuck them in the back. If you wear dhoti like a sannyasi lungi, that's telling the world that you don't want to identify yourself with ISKCON. If you don't tuck your dhoti in, so that's going to be there. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah.
Brahmachari life is supposed to be very very simple, like dress.
Yes.
Brahmachari have to like say, what is that? Okay, the meaning that Brahmachari is the dhoti, you put the backside on the dhoti.
Yes.
So I think that's also a little bit complicated.
It's complicated to look. It just takes a minute. Okay, it took me a few months to learn how to put tilak on. But it's not that complicated. But it's just one simple piece of cloth, not stitched. It's very simple to make a dhoti. Just pick a piece of cloth the right length. So how more simple can you get? One straight piece of cloth. It just, I have to wrap it up right, that's all. Okay, so a sannyasi's life is even more simple than a brahmachari's life, but you have to take sannyas for that. Then you can have a brahmachari to wash your clothes for you. Life is complicated in the material world, but we try to make it as simple as possible. How simple? I mean, just like they tell the school children, you have to come wear a uniform to school so that the children won't be, spending fortunes on fancy clothes and then having fights with each other. In America, they shoot each other. If someone's not wearing the right color clothes, they'll shoot him dead. So to avoid this, all these complications of battles and competitions over dressing, they make the children wear uniforms. So we have our uniform. Saffron, dhoti, kurta, and that's it. School uniform. Very simple. And you just keep a couple of dhotis, a couple of kurtas, and you don't have to have a big wardrobe. Gopal Bhatta Prabhu, his business, he built a big business making special closets for people to put in their houses. Made a fortune, $100 million selling closets. Because people need huge closets to keep all their clothes. The closets that come in the house are not enough. They have to build a special closet as big as all the rooms to keep all their different clothing. But brahmachari can keep on half a shelf all his clothing. How more simple can you get? He doesn't need, you know, 20 different pairs of shoes for different occasions. Okay. Anything else?
Yes, ma'am. So I received a Mahabalan from Badrinarayan
from Yasadev
this week.
And
so I
brought
a little...
From Badrinarayan?
Yeah, I brought from the Rodas.
Okay, you want to distribute? These are, this is remnants of the garment?
Yes.
Oh. Okay, we're going to save this and distribute it on October 1st. October 1st, Saturday, is the opening day, the first day of classes. We're going to have a short ceremony. We'll have a special breakfast. Oh, you got bags for everybody. Okay. Thank you. Okay, take it. October 1st, we'll have breakfast and then a short opening ceremony for about a half hour. What? Breakfast at 9? 9:15, we'll have ceremony. 9:30. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.